In the summer of 1968, Freeman County, Virginia, stands as a microcosm of America's racial divide. The McHenry River physically separates white and black communities, connected only by the ironically named Stonewall Jackson Bridge. When deputies Raymond Leroy and Gene Taliaferro viciously beat a handcuffed black prisoner, we witness the brutal reality of this divide. Gene, whose family once owned slaves, enforces racial hierarchy through violence, threatening not just the prisoner, but his family. Enter John Robert Jack Lee, a struggling 32-year-old attorney driving an ancient Fiat and living modestly. Unlike his successful law school peers with family connections, Jack has spent 8 years scraping by on minor cases. His family reflects America's complex class structure. His father, Frank, is a union mechanic, his mother, Hilly, grew up in extreme poverty, and his sister, Lucy, is mentally disabled due to a medical accident. When elderly Miss Jessup asks Jack to represent her granddaughter Pearl's husband, Jerome, who's been arrested for allegedly killing 2 white people, Jack enters uncharted territory. Despite never having represented a black client before, he agrees to visit Jerome at the county jail, where guards mock his decision and the full weight of institutional racism becomes immediately apparent. Jerome Washington sits in his cell, his bandaged face evidence of police brutality. Despite his Vietnam service and Purple Heart, he faces overwhelming prejudice in a system designed to presume his guilt. Prosecutors claim Jerome killed the Randolphs, where he worked as a handyman, for money. Their evidence? $50 found at his home, his presence at the crime scene, and testimony that the Randolphs feared him. Jerome maintains he found the couple already dead when arriving for his weekly pay and saw a mysterious blue convertible. Notably, despite the bloody crime scene, Jerome's shoes show minimal blood, physically impossible had he committed the murders. The case escalates when Pearl Washington is arrested. Prosecutors allege she brought Jerome clean clothes and removed bloody ones and the murder weapon. Unknown to them, Pearl has a secret alibi. She was getting an illegal abortion after being raped by her employer, a fact she fears would destroy her marriage if revealed. Jack's defense of Jerome brings swift backlash. Anonymous racist calls, his mother's worry about their reputation, and threats from Howard Pickett, a wealthy Wallace supporter. The situation escalates when 4 men break into Jack's home and assault him. Help comes from Desiree DuBose, an accomplished black attorney with impressive credentials, Howard University at 16, Yale law editor, and legal defense fund counsel featured in Time. Her record includes numerous successful capital cases and civil rights victories, from challenging Virginia's segregation laws to participating in Selma's Bloody Sunday. Their partnership visibly challenges Freeman County's racial order. At the Golden Leaf, they face blatant hostility, including someone spitting in DuBose's wine. As they work together, mutual respect grows. Their investigation reveals a crucial detail in the Randolph's will. Whichever child survives inherits everything, giving both siblings potential motives. Son Sam Randolph, needing expensive lung treatment, had previously attempted to gain control of his parents' property. As Jack and DuBose prepare their defense, Jack's sister Lucy is murdered, apparent retaliation for his involvement in the case. At Lucy's funeral, Jack's mother Hilly insists he continued despite the danger. Whenever you let a bully make you turn and run, that bully will never go away. Family secrets emerge. Jack learns Miss Jessup once cared for Lucy during his mother's hospitalization. Hilly confides to DuBose about loving a black man named Joshua Taylor before societal pressure separated them. When a preacher claimed Lucy's condition was divine punishment for this relationship, Hilly rejected this idea, realizing, "For God there is no color, there is only love." DuBose became a lawyer after her cousin was murdered by a Louisiana sheriff in the 1940s who claimed self-defense and faced no consequences. This injustice drove DuBose to ensure his kind could never wear a badge or carry a gun, hoping to change America one lawsuit at a time. The trial opens with clear racial dynamics, an all-white, mostly male jury, despite the county being 40% black. Judge Josiah T. Ambrose, who replaced the original judge suspiciously, has an undisclosed KKK past that Jack and DeBow strategically withhold. Initially, the prosecution appears strong. Medical examiner Herman Till presents disturbing crime scene photos that inflame the jury. Deputies testify about finding Jerome at the scene, while witnesses claim the Randolphs plan to fire him out of fear. Through systematic cross-examination, Jack and DeBow dismantle this narrative. They expose a witness whose gambling debts vanished after testifying against Jerome. They establish Sam Randolph's financial motives and, critically, get Till to admit Jerome's shoes had minimal blood despite 14 pints at the crime scene, impossible if he'd been present during the murders. The defense also reveals Ann Randolph's secret divorce plans and healed fractures indicating domestic abuse, contradicting the prosecution's story. As the trial progresses, Jack and DeBose uncover critical evidence. They expose a blackmailed witness and find Peter Clancy, a former salesman who provides Pearl an alibi by confirming her presence at the abortion provider's house during the murders. They prove Jerome's permanent Vietnam knee injury makes it physically impossible for him to have committed the murders as described. When Herman Till demonstrates the powerful swing needed for the fatal wounds, Jerome attempts the same motion but collapses in pain. The breakthrough comes when Jack's brother Jefferson discovers Christine Hanover wasn't in Washington as claimed. Their maid reveals Christine visited her parents that afternoon, returning in Walter Gates' convertible while wearing a long coat despite the heat. Confronted with this evidence, Christine confesses she found her mother dead, killed by her father with a bayonet. When her father attacked her, she fought back, seized the weapon, and killed him. She then called Curtis Gates, whose son Walter helped frame Jerome. With Christine's confession, charges against Jerome and Pearl Washington are dismissed. Outside the courthouse, Jack's unity speech is cut short when Kenny Leroy, Deputy Raymond's son, fatally shoots Jerome and wounds Jack with the same bullet. After 3 months of recovery, Jack learns that Jerome's funeral drew mourners of both races, hinting at change. Miss Jessup now lives with Pearl, helping with the children, while the Hanovers bought Pearl a new house and fund her education. Jack leaves Freeman County for Chicago to propose practicing law with DeBose. Though she explains she can't be romantically involved after losing Paul, Jack argues that hate, not love, killed Paul and Lucy, and that change happens one person at a time. The novel ends with cautious optimism as DeBose asks, "So what now?" And Jack replies, "Now we get to work, Desiree, together." Their partnership represents both healing and commitment to justice, a reminder that while America's racial wounds run deep, cross-racial connections offer hope. What matters isn't just verdicts, but the courage to keep fighting when the system seems rigged.